Okay. Continuing from yesterday, again, page 41. Although thus not existing in reality, this manifestation of transformations created from the mode of passion appears real because the self-manifested, self-luminous, absolute truth exhibits himself in the form of the material variety of the senses, the sense objects, the mind, and the elements of physical nature. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28-22. So the point, in summary from here, is that these manifestations that we see here in this world, technically, even though they're existing, they're not real. Right? The lack of reality is because we're not actually seeing them for what they actually are. The reality is that they're Krishna. So because of that, they appear to us to be real. But in reality, they're not real. Because reality is, you see it as Krishna. You don't see it as Krishna, you're seeing illusion. You see Krishna, you're actually seeing reality. But even you don't see Krishna, the reason the illusion seems real is because Krishna is the manifestation of that illusion. Does that make sense? So the whole point is it's just Krishna. If you're Krishna conscious, you recognize as Krishna, so you're very happy being absorbed in Krishna. If you're not Krishna conscious, you're still seeing Krishna, that's why you think it's something nice. But you don't know it's Krishna, so that's the illusion. You think it's the material energy that's attractive. Does that make sense? So in any case, the devotee, the materialist, they're all dealing with Krishna, right? Of course, this completely blows out of the water the idea that we're a bunch of little band of madmen and we're just sitting in this little corner and we're just, you know, cowering because the karmis may not think what we're doing is very nice. The whole point is it's all Krishna anyway. That's all there is. So this fear means we're not identifying ourselves as servant of Krishna. Because if you identify yourself as servant of Krishna, there is no fear. The term that one must become fearless. Fearless means you identify yourself as servant of Krishna. That's what it means. Because if you identify, you're fearless. You're identifying with the field of activities. And therefore thinking that you're a funny little part of it. You know, I'm sitting here in this field of activities, walking through this mall here, you know, around the corner from Alachua, and therefore I look weird. Because other people in the field think I look weird. So you've identified as matter, that's why you're afraid. If you identify as servant of Krishna, what's there to be afraid of? Everything everybody's looking at is Krishna anybody. They think the guy sitting over there with shades on, you know, being really cool is something attractive, but that is Krishna. That coolness is Krishna. That togetherness, that not being needy is Krishna. But they don't know it's Krishna. They think it's the guy there with his Ray-Ban sunglasses, but it's not. It's Krishna's potency. So that's the thing. That's how Prabhupada can go anywhere with confidence. Because Krishna's everywhere. It's not that he's just sitting there in the temple and when you go out, then it's, you know, Maya's place and she's in charge. No, it's still Krishna's place. Just in the temple, we're allowed to take part in running it. Lakshmiji runs the place. We can assist. And outside, Maya runs the place because no one's interested in serving Krishna through Lakshmi. So therefore, then Maya runs it. But all it is Krishna. There's nothing else. That's reality. Anything other than that is illusion. It's that simple. Right? So then, taking this then a step further, because we have the element, is that, how you say? The non-difference between Krishna and his energy, just like we have this rock. Okay? What is this? A rock. Okay, now let us turn it around. What is this? Yes. But is it the same rock? So it's a rock. So that means the Lord and His energies are non-different. Right? So now we're going to see the other side. So if we thought that one was weird, now it gets more fun. Right? Now, this is Bhagavatam 6:19-13. Mother Lakshmi, who is here, is the reservoir of all spiritual qualities, whereas you manifest and enjoy all these qualities. Indeed, you are actually the enjoyer of everything. You live as the supersoul of all living entities, and the goddess of fortune is the form of their bodies, senses, and minds. She also has a holy name and form, whereas you are the support of all such names and forms, and the cause for their manifestation. Right, so now we're taking it a step further. Okay, now we were dealing with the Brahman aspect. You know, that Krishna has entered everything, it's all His, whatever manifestation you see is Him. That's the Brahman aspect. You don't see really the interaction. Right? It's just these energies are interacting with each other. Right? So now we take it a step further. Is actually all the forms and everything that you're dealing with, the manifestation here, that's Lakshmi. Krishna is the support of that. Right? That's how He is the creator. He's the support of the created. But it's Lakshmi. And so, therefore, then, He is the enjoyer of everything because it's Lakshmi. So, He doesn't deal with material energy. Because material energy is our concept. It's just Lakshmi. There's superior manifestations of Lakshmi. There's inferior manifestations. So this is inferior. In the spiritual world, that's superior. Right? Because it's all there. Radharani's there. She expands. Her sister is Anangamanjari. Anangamanjari is Vrindavan. She is the Dham. You know what I'm saying? The people. So that means, so she is there doing her passive at the same time as everything you see is also her expansion. So in the same way, everything you see here, all the inanimate forms, all the animate forms, all the minds, the senses, everything that you see and interact with, that is all her expansion. And just as in the spiritual world is expanded to create an environment for the Lord's pastimes, this place is also the same way. So just because we can't see it doesn't mean that's what's not going on. And to not be able to understand this, or appreciate this, means you understand, appreciate this, this is deism. Right? The God's something else, and this is something else. Separate from God. So it's atheism. So that's the whole point. It is Him. That's where it gets grungy. It's not grungy that God's this, it's grungy that you're trying to enjoy this. The problem's not God has come as everything you see here. The problem is you're trying to enjoy that. That's the reality. Right? That's the stark reality. Is the living entity is trying to enjoy what is the interaction between Lakshmi and Narayan. And not see Lakshmi Narayan and claim, I am Narayan, and I am the controller and enjoyer, and all this is mine. So Lakshmi is mine, and I am Vishnu. Right? This is the problem. Not that Krishna has become everything. He's everything in the spiritual world. You understand? Krishna's there playing in the... No, we'll leave that one. You know what I'm saying? All the different things are there. You might, Krishna has... Lord Chaitanya has a pastime that he is the old pots from eating. All the clay pots are thrown in the garbage pile. And then he is somehow or another come to the conclusion that everything's all one. So he's sitting in the garbage pile. And Mother, you know, Sachimata is saying, why you're sitting there? Because it's all the same, you know, it's all manifestations of the same thing. So what does it matter whether you're sitting here or there? You know, the pot inside, the pot outside, it's all the same thing. You break the pot, it all becomes one. Right? And so she then says that, yes, but there's a difference in manifestation, right? And therefore they have their effects, because eternally there is this relationship of God in this creation. Right? So to have that pastime means there has to be pots. So how are those pots manifested? Are those pots Maya, or are those pots Lakshmi? He's having his pastime in his dham, in the spiritual world. What are those pots? Right. Yeah, it's part of his pastime. It's not Dhanakasura who thinks he's separate from the Lord. That's Maya. Right? That's Lakshmi in the form of the external potency. He's pots. Garbage. So don't think all the garbage in your house isn't still Krishna's potency. Right? That's the idea. Right? So, here is that this is how at any time, any place, anything can be connected to Krishna. So we see all this thing of being real Prabhu and, you know, just being practical and getting into our puritanical moralism and all these different kind of things. They're just all 100% just atheistic nonsense. That's all. Because you think it's separate from Krishna. Right? That's the whole point. You think it's separate from Krishna. You know, this concept of eternal damnation, that means you're thinking that there's something separate from Krishna. Otherwise, how do you get to come to this point? The point is someone's in Maya, put them back in the fire, Krishna conscious, they're fire. But eternal damnation means it doesn't matter how much you put them in the fire and throw some extra petrol on top, they will never become fire again because there's something separate from God. And I can perceive that. And I am in control of that. In other words, what's separate from God, I'm in control of. So if we actually look at this, what is separate from God in this Western religion? That's Satan. And who's in control of this hell? Satan. So therefore, if you see something separate and you're in control of that, what does that make you? Right. So that's the point. If you don't see it in this way, you're not using your brains. And if you don't use your brains, you put yourself in a really foolish position. And this foolish position, even though we're very proud of it, you're still being an idiot. Right? Does that make sense? So, Tamar's used to quote for one thing. It doesn't matter who you are or who you think you are, right? It's still the reality. So, that's what's going on here. We may not be able to maintain this. At this moment, we're hearing this, we're able to see this. So as soon as the class is over and we go, okay, Hari Bol, and walk out of here, then everything turns back into its regular dirt and trees and, you know, everything else and like that. But the whole idea is that being able to see this and being able to understand this, then it puts the mentality more proper so that we make less mistakes. We're more open to when Krishna consciousness comes to us in whatever form, that we're able to take it and use it. Right? So these are very, very important elements, because we can see this is where the mind is tricking us. Right? This is where the craziness comes in, because the craziness means it's a different philosophy. Right? Craziness doesn't mean we're in pure Vaishnava philosophy, pure Vaishnava understanding, and things are going wrong. No. It means we're seeing it differently than pure Krishna consciousness. Right? So now we've got given the Brahman level, this one where we see Lakshmi, we're dealing with the, it means basically there's an element of the Paramatma, but also the Bhagavan. It just depends upon whether you're just seeing this as, okay, the Lord, His creation, Lakshmi, like this. Then it's taking that, but if you're seeing their interaction, then the
So I wanted to put this nearer to you, because
mosquito. Oh, no, I'm okay.
You're okay.
No, I'm waving my arms just out of being, you know, it's just something to do. Thank you very much, though. It wasn't mosquitoes. Sometimes it's mosquitoes, but it's just Right. In other words, if the emotional level is low and we're waving our arms, that's mosquitoes. No, thank you. Like that. Okay. Yes, yeah, so these levels, these are the levels that are open to us. This is what's being offered to us. So the only thing that gets in the way of us seeing like this and making this progression from impiety to piety to Brahman understanding to Paramatma to Bhagavan is our own doubts and misgivings. Oh, Krishna couldn't be that. Right? Somebody got divorced, so they're eternally damned. They can't hold any position or service in the society forever. Right? So what does that mean? That means the holy name can't purify you. Right? Before you join the eight cows, you're not going to get rid of that for 2.5 generations in your genes. But somehow or another, that's just poof, gone because we chanted Hare Krishna. But if you join the movement and you make any mistake ever again, you're finished. Where does this come from? Where does this concept come from? It's not Vaishnava, it's not devotional, it's not our philosophy. Where is it? It's Christianity. Even the Jews are a little bit more abroad than this. Right? The Old Testament, everybody did something wrong. I think except maybe Abraham. But I think other than him, everybody did some really bad thing. Right? The Wailing Wall, the most sacred place for the Jews, that's the Temple of Solomon, right? And then, you know, he gets off on somebody else's wife. Like that. Somebody got drunk, somebody did this, somebody did that. Moses, he didn't have faith in the Holy Name. Right? They still worship Moses even though he didn't go into Israel. Right? But in the New Testament, squeaky clean, boy, squeaky clean. Everything immaculate, everything perfect. If anything went wrong, then, you know, they can't handle it. Why? Because they're more impersonal. Right? Then you bring it further forward into the Protestant. They throw out all the sadhus, all culture, all everything. So it's just you and God, that's it. You and your money, you and your sense gratification. Right? This is why we make rules like this. Because we don't believe in the power of the Holy Name. Does this make sense? Because the point is here, everything being Krishna, that means everything's already in Krishna consciousness. It's a matter of us seeing it. That's all. It's just a matter of us seeing it. Nothing else. So we go on in all these other illusory things, and we come up with all these weird cultural phenomena that we take as normal. Normal for what? For a Westerner, it's not normal for the Asians, it's not normal for those from Africa, South America, anywhere else other than the first world. Right? And therefore we think our imperialistic view is a W. Right? That's the problem. So we bring our own non-Krishna conscious baggage into Krishna consciousness. We don't take up the Krishna conscious culture. Then we'll be tricked. And who is tricking us? The mind. So that's the whole point of this. It's the key. How to get at going from Krishna non-Krishna conscious. Krishna, it's the mind. But you have to be able to see what the mind is doing. What it's actually accepting and not accepting. What it's accepting and rejecting. So it's not accepting Krishna's everywhere because we have our idea, it's contaminated, therefore Krishna can't enter it. That's the whole point. Krishna can't enter it, right? How many temples that those in the temple, they're the Krishna conscious people, and those living outside the temple are something less? Right? Ambarish, he was a strict brahmachari, right? What about Yudhishthira and his brothers? You know? What about any of the great devotees? Narad Muni's a brahmachari. Kumaras are brahmacharis. But this idea is quite universal. You go around to our 400 temples, how many hundreds of them will think like this? And how many one or two won't? Why? Because we think that this Krishna can't enter into that. that Krishna is not all those different things. But that's, so this is the problem. So it's not just some theoretical philosophy, as some will try to make it out to be, and that their bourgeois economics is the reality. No. This is the reality, and all that is illusion. It's the illusion you have to deal with. That's reality. But the point is you don't deal with it, then you come back and take birth again. That simple. So one has to be able to take these things. It's not like there's an alternative. It's God's creation. It's God's laws. You have to follow His laws. You know, with an idea to please Him. So that's, these things are here and are being pointed out to us. That's His kindness. Because for Krishna, it doesn't matter. We've been here how long? We've done what? Right? I've heard it said that the devotee, someone becomes a devotee after he's already been through all the 8,400,000 species. So that means you've done a lot of nonsense. And somehow or another, that can all be purified by the holy name. So the process still goes on, even as a devotee. Right? Unless, of course, you're a Puritan. Then it doesn't go on. You know what I'm saying? The point is why is the example given of iron and fire? This is not just an arbitrary example. And what is this example of? The example of the absolute. Right? Because we'll take absolute, it has to be one thing, it can never be anything else. But absolute means it's in contact with the absolute. So that means everything's in contact. Now it's a matter of, are you aware of that or not? You're aware, you're in the fire of the absolute. You're not aware, then you're separate. Because to say you're eternally damned means that you have a situation that is not connected to Krishna. And so what philosophy is that? Right? It has to be Christianity. There's no such thing in Vaishnavism. Right? Jagai Madai could be redeemed. And they were great Brahmins. You know, high grade Brahmins that were degraded. You have a question? Yes.
When you talk about motherness and childness and coolness like that, it seems that these are stripping the jiva of any kind of personality, by virtue of the fact that all these energies are some kind of abstract metaphysical ideals that are just manifesting through us in some sense.
Is that a problem? Your blender in your house, is it the plastic and little metal things that is making everything happen? Or is it the current that's moving through it? You can have blenders sitting there all day. If it's not plugged in, nothing gets blended. So the point is, why do you call it a blender? Electricity also goes through the refrigerator. It goes through the iron. And it goes through your electric toothbrush. So why do you call it what you call it?
Because of its function or its service.
Yes, function or form. So just because the potency, the Lord's potency, is making something work, doesn't mean that it doesn't have that particular flavors and identities. But even then, is that the jiva? Was the jiva born in, you know, Manhattan? So then, what's the problem of it being stripped of that? So that's the thing. We can strip it of it and work with it at the same time. The modern concept, you're either stripped of it or you have it. And they can't deal with anything else. They can't deal with, what do you call it? Oxymoron. You know, that you have two things that don't make any sense that match. You know, it's like saying, wait a minute, a romantic Greek drama. Right? They don't go together, right? Somebody has to die. You know, somebody has to be some kind of tragedy. But the point is material world is that. You have the soul, which is transcendental. You have the Lord and His energies, which are transcendental. And all this is being manifest through dead matter, you know, but the forms and everything are created because of the desire of the jiva, who is transcendental, and through Lakshmi, which is transcendental. But because the living entity doesn't see that, he thinks it's something separate from God. Therefore, he thinks he can enjoy it. Because if it's God, how do you enjoy it? Does that make sense? So, it's very personal, the whole thing. That the jiva himself is in this illusion by his own design. Right? And what is manifesting now is his particular condition nature. And it's just a matter of he can even take that conditioned nature through the material energy and still connect it all to Krishna, see Krishna, and be just as Krishna conscious as if he was taking the spiritual nature and his spiritual form and engaging that in the Lord's service. Because for Krishna, there's no difference. You know what I'm saying? You know, is this me? But this isn't, right? Right? So the hands might see some big difference. But the person who owns the hands doesn't. You know what I'm saying? My hand is superior, my foot's not, therefore you can step on my foot. No, it's still me. So for Krishna, his internal potency, external potency, it's all him. So he can be manifest and interact and experience rasa anywhere, in any manifestation. But within that, there's superior and inferior. You know what I'm saying? You know, someone comes up and a friend goes, pats you on the back, you know, then that has one feeling. If he comes up and pats you, let's say, on your shin, you know, it works, okay, but it's not as good as patting you on the back. You know what I'm saying? So the material energy, the rasa in the material world between Lakshmi and Narayan, and their manifestations here, it's their interaction, but it's only a spark of their real full form in the spiritual world. So it's rasa, but it's very, very minimal. But for us, we think it's something very, very special. You know, because we identify with dead matter, so any movement is better than nothing, right? You know, if you're sitting there and there's nothing, you can't see any form of life, and that's it, and suddenly you see a spider walking by, man, you're best friends. You know, wow, hey, you know, and they'll have a whole, you know what I'm saying? So that's what's going on, is that we have taken the material world, identified with it, therefore any movement in it that's created by this verse, by the Lord and His potencies, by Lakshmiji, then we take that as something special and immediately we're enthused by it. But we're enthused because we're people. And we're enthused by people. The dead matter is an enthusiast. That's the illusion. That's why we suffer. Because we think it's there. And the material energy is temporary. So it's always going to have a creation, manifestation and a dissolution. So everything that we think is special goes away. But it hasn't. Because that potency is still there. That interaction between the Lord and His potencies is still going on. So we recognize that. Then we move into the eternal realm. But as long as we think it's not that, then we think it's this temporary realm. Therefore, everything's temporary. Does that make sense? It's very personal. Like there was one letter I read where one devotee's complaining to Srila Prabhupada about another devotee that they're so impersonal, that they're dealing in this way and that way. And Prabhupada says, no, it's because it's personal. That's why they're dealing that way. Because they're people, they're dealing like that. Maybe in an unpurified state. So they're being selfish, but it's because they're a person that they're dealing in this way. And personal means, what do you care? Doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is everything is personal. But the problem is it's all self-centered. That's what's unnatural for the jiva. The jiva is not, its nature is not to be self-centered. Its nature is to assist in others' relationship. So that sense of sacrifice, that's the eternal nature of the jiva. So when that's accepted, then the jiva becomes happy. But we don't have faith that we'll be happy by doing that. We feel, unless I do something for myself, I can't be happy. like that. But that's our idea, but that's not the way we are. We are happy when we're assisting someone else. Like that, and they're happy. Otherwise, why is it movies and all this is so popular? It's someone else, it's not you. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It's other people. And you get so involved. You read a book. You get so involved. You hear a story. Gossip. Why do we get into gossip? Because it's someone else. And their feelings and relations. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So it's all in relationship to others. You know what I'm saying? It's been misguided because that's where the illusion comes in. Is we don't actually understand what we're dealing with. Right? You know, we're handed a cauliflower and we think it's a lawnmower. That's the illusion. You know. So, yes?
This phenomenon of devotees in the Western world where feeling insecure and not confident and comfortable wearing devotional dress. And because they feel they're, people think they're weird, people think they're, what is this energy? What is it?
That's Maya, because we're not identifying actually serving the Krishna and what's going on. Because if you think you're weird wearing bed sheets, you ask all the parents, they think their kids, their teenagers are weird for what they wear. And one group of teenagers thinks the other group of teenagers is weird. So everybody thinks everybody else is weird. All it is that some are good at keeping it quiet and some are not so good at keeping it quiet. But everybody thinks everybody else is weird. Except for your two or three friends, everybody else is weird. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is. So the point is if you're confident this is what we wear, you know, what do we care? After a while, people accept it. If a priest walks down the street in America wearing his, you know, big black whatever it is with his little white collar, does anybody complain? Laugh, roll on the ground? No, nobody. The nuns go out looking weirder than our ladies. Funny little skirts and the little things on their hair, trying to keep their hair covered and all that kind of stuff. Right? And everybody accepts them for who they are. They'll have a nice conversation, even respect them. Right? So they respect that order, so they are respected. We don't respect it. We think it's something less, therefore no one respects. Just like if you walk down the street and the dog comes up and growls at you, you know, you just look at him and keep walking. But if you start to run, he will chase you. So in the same way, you think you look stupid, then everybody else thinks you look stupid. It's just a point. If you're comfortable with yourself, no one else will be uncomfortable. Prabhupada was comfortable. Everyone else was comfortable. No one said, Prabhupada, who's the guy in the funny bed sheets? They only say, we're in funny bed sheets. Why? Because we think we're in funny bed sheets. Right, and then to do this, then devotees come up with these things. Well, it's Indian. It's not nowhere in the Shastra does it say dhoti and all that. We've got such great scholars in our movement, right? We've got fabulous scholars in our movement, right? Prabhupada talks about dhoti. Where did it come from? Prabhupada doesn't know what he's talking about. So if the word dhoti is not used, there's only one word for that. You know, there's only one word for this. You know, tin can with four rubber tires on it and the steering wheel. There's so many words for it. So there's not words for these? You ever heard of the thing tri-kacha? Tri-kacha is another name for a dhoti. It means it has three different sets of folds. So, I mean, there's so many things there. Oh, the sari is not, you know, that's a Muslim thing. No, the Muslims took up Indian dress when they came here. You go to, you know, Mongolia, look at what they wear. You go to Kazakhstan, look what they wear. You go over to Turkey, you look at what they wear. Do they wear what they wear here? No. So when the Mughals came into India, they took up the Indian dress. They modified it how they liked. They liked the kurtas, they made them a little longer. You know? They liked the collar on the Bugle Bundy thing, but they didn't like the Bundy aspect of it. They did it for a while. So they kept the collar and then dropped the rest of it. Then we call it a Chinese collar. You know, so all these things, they just took what was here and adjusted it. The music's the same. They just didn't like all the words about Krishna, so they took that out. So all you hear is, like that. You know? So it's the same thing. And then these foolish Indologists, then they say it's something else. You know, they're idiots. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. It means a person who is the head of a department or a scholar in Judaism is Jewish. And what they say is in line with their scriptures and in support of it. Someone who's head of Muslim studies is the same. Buddhist studies is the same. Only in Indology is atheists of something else. And we take it up and we sit there licking their shoes and thinking that it's special. It's just nonsense. And then we talk like them. So this is the problem. You know, they're too intelligent. This is what Prabhupada meant about too intelligent. They're so smart, they go into the realm of stupidity. But they don't understand that stupidity, in our terminology, is called atheism. So when they profess all this stuff, they're professing atheism. And we're not coming in here from the, you know, hellfire and brimstone thing. We're coming in here from straight philosophy. Straight metaphysics. You can pick it apart and show exactly how it is. So we're just talking fact. It's not sentiment. So that's the difficulty. If there's a need, if it will help the preaching to wear karmic clothes, we're happy to wear them. We couldn't care less. But to say you can only wear these and no one else, that's nonsense. So our devotees will go in karmic clothes to one of these, you know, what do you call it? All the religions get together? Interfaith thing. And the Buddhists are wearing their Buddhist dress and the nuns and the priests are in their dress and we're in karmic clothes. It's like, that's just pure unalloyed attachment to their own conditioned nature. That's all it is. It's nothing to do with preaching Krishna consciousness, nothing. He just found a nice out for it. That's all. That's all. You stick to your faith, people have, you know, join. You don't stick to your faith. Who wants to join somebody who is faithless? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. People are looking for something in their life. They're not looking for insecurity. They already have that. Right? So this whole point is that Krishna is there in everything, everywhere, and there's nothing that's not Him. So there's not any problem. I say, why is it you pay, I mean, as I've said this so many times, why is it you pay so much money for a model? You just get some guy or girl and they walk down, you know, this runway and then they pay them so much. Why? Because they look so fabulous? Some of them look pretty bad. There's nothing there. They say it's a girl, but it would be really hard to figure out anatomically if it is. You know what I'm saying? Or they say it's a guy, but that would also be hard to figure out. Why do they pay them? Because they got panache. They got attitude. They put on the most ridiculous outfits that there are and walk down there like this is like perfectly normal. And the people on the side sit there and go, I'll take 10 of those, 100 of those, 1,000 of these. If they just took an ordinary person off the street and walked down, they wouldn't buy anything. So that's the whole thing. It's who wears what they're wearing with, you know, confidence, that's what people notice. That's all. So there's no such thing as really in fashion or out of fashion. It's a matter of what people wear with confidence. You think it's in fashion, I wear it with confidence. And I'm wearing it every day until the fashion changes. And then when others are wearing something else, then I feel insecure. Then it goes out of fashion. So some people like it, they wear it every day. No one says anything. They're still wearing their old 1940s pleats in their pants stuff. And nobody says anything. Why? Because they feel comfortable in it. That's all it is. Because they identify, I am these pants. So therefore, like that. We can't do that very good. We're kind of stuck in the middle. But we can, I am servant of Krishna. And it'll generate more confidence than this other thing. So it's just a matter of... So these things, the philosophy and the culture, you can't separate them. Because if it's philosophy without culture, it'll be speculation. And if it's culture without philosophy, it'll just be sentiment.
Wouldn't they also learn devotional dressing? Just like a police officer is not going to wear his uniform, he's not going to do something that's against the law.
Yeah.
No, that's he's wearing his police outfit.
Yeah.
So similarly, a devotee wearing his devotional clothes is going to be a little more...
He has to be more careful, yes.
More careful with the material energy. He won't be going to movies and then doing...
Yeah, like that. Like that. Unless there's a bunch of other devotees there. What is it? Heard before it was, what is it? The Star Wars had so many Krishna conscious elements, so the devotees were going to see that.
The first week in our Bhakti program, all the Bhaktis went to Gandhi.
Gandhi, okay.
So what you say is that clothes are very important?
Clothes are not very important. What's important is the mentality. That's what we're trying to get at here. But the point is that one, it's a matter of identity. This is a very, very fine point. I've spoken so strongly on this, about it, but I'm speaking actually not about the clothes. I'm speaking about the mentality with which they're worn. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. In other words, the devotee is wearing a dhoti. Why is he wearing it? What's his mentality? Or he's not wearing it. What's his mentality? Or what's his? He's wearing karmic clothes. What's his mentality? Like that. So that's what we're talking about, because we're dealing here with the mind. These others are external manifestations. That's why it's very, very... It's difficult many times to catch the points because of this... how you say, seeing a difference between the subtle and the gross. I mean, technically, the spiritual and the metaphysical and the physical are all connected, but we tend to see them all very differently. So, it's like this. The devotee's wearing his dhoti, and it's because we're devotees of Krishna, but we're special and all these other nonsense, rascal, dirty, filthy scumbags are out here. Then that's nice, he has faith, but his faith is polluted by pride. So therefore, the karmis won't appreciate, right? Or he's wearing his karmi clothes, and he's thinking that, you know, it's because you can't wear devotee clothes and this and that, and so we have to wear this. People will see him as insecure, as weak, right? Or if he identifies, the karmi is identifying, yes, I am these clothes, I look great, you know? And that, you know, this guy, you know, brand name stuff, so I'm looking good and all that, but they identify with the clothes, so people notice the clothes, but it's not necessarily notice the person, other than his attitude. If he's able to project enough attitude, they'll notice that, you know? But when they see him, they don't go necessarily, you look great, they'll say, wow, nice shirt. Right? If he's projecting enough energy and looking comfortable, then they'll say, you look great. So even the karmis are unknowingly making a differentiation. So the devotee is wearing this because this is our tradition, this is what we wear. Or he's wearing the karmic clothes because this is what's going to work for this preaching. So therefore, I should look my best at it, but I still don't identify with it. That's then what this affords us. Because it's the Lord's potencies that are working. In other words, clothes are worn by human beings. Right? It's just part of the human culture. In that it looks aesthetic. There's some aspect of practicalness and aesthetics that's there. Right? So those are potencies. Right? Practicalness is a potency, that it looks good is a potency. Right? Now, That is the principle on what it is. So it's not what you wear. So the ideal is what they wear in the spiritual world. So that'll be your dhotis, saris, and all that. You have the opportunity why one wouldn't want to wear it. Krishna wears it. You like to be like who you have appreciation for. But if the situation doesn't afford that, you wear whatever is works. But the main principle is that it works and it looks good. Like that. That's the bottom line. It has to look. You have to look like a cultured person. Like that. So even you're wearing non-devotional clothes, it should be nice non-devotional clothes that reflect the environment you're in. You know, you got an in, you're going to the Academy Award, you wear a tuxedo. You know what I'm saying? It's that's what fits the situation. And you better wear a good one or they'll think you're an idiot. Does that make sense? So it's more the mentality of wearing it and how it's worn that's more important than what's being worn. Right? So those who speak just that you're wearing a dhoti, that's Krishna consciousness, they've missed the point, but at least they're trying to be follow some tradition. Those that say it doesn't matter, you can wear whatever you want, we're not from India, so we don't wear Indian clothes, like that, but then you define what's American clothes. A lot of Americans wear a big, huge chain like this. You know, so why aren't our devotees wearing that? You know, they wear shades at night. I don't see the devotees wearing that. A couple of them, of course. But you know what I'm saying? So, what's American? What's English? What's French? How is it defined? So, therefore, it's a matter of what is cultured for the situation. So the thing is basically, unless the other person has some kind of attitude problem, with devotional clothes work anywhere. You know, they're the most universal of anything. But if the other person's having a problem, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a group of persons, well, two groups. One group that wore three-piece suits with spats, right? And another group that dressed up, they wore these black turbans, black kind of real poofy kind of like cape things with a little white collar. And these, I think, what do they call those? Those pants, super tight. They're puffy up here, and then they're super tight on the legs.
Jodhpurs.
Plus fours. Okay, like that. I think they also call it. And they may call them chudidars. I think I'm not sure. It's a kind of pants, and they're really tight along here. You know, with black shoes. And they would go out presenting, they would be going, in other words, the guys in suits would go out for getting work done. The guys in the other thing would go out to preach to the British because they would accept that they're the priests. You know? Like that. So it was because of the mentality of the British, then he used that. So we don't have any problem with it, but they never thought that, you know, this is okay and devotional clothes are stupid. Or unnecessary. No. When they needed that, they wore that. Just like you take a bath, you put on a gumsha. You know, so if the pants and the polo t-shirt are so important, why are they not wearing them in the shower? No, because it doesn't match. So that's the thing. So you wear what's appropriate. So it's a mentality. So in other words, this stuff here then is taken into the Lord's potencies. Because how do you choose what looks good or not? So you take something more towards the sattvic. Otherwise, you can go out with your, you know, stress jeans and this and that, and look, you know, just like something, you know, off the street, right? The reason it's stress is because somebody picked you up and rubbed the sidewalk with you and made it clean, right? And then stood you back up again, and then you go fashion, right? You know, like that. So that's the thing: is you don't look like someone off the street. And if you check, you go to most every temple, when a devotee leaves the temple and goes out on Sankirtan, a lot of them look like they're off the street. Or they look like, you know, they belong in an insane asylum. You know? Or they have to be a complete, total nerd down to university that doesn't even notice their clothing. So, you tell me how any of those actually fit in. You know? So it's very few that actually dress that would fit in. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I've only seen a couple that really dress good. Balaram, remember? He used to dress good. You know, Bhavananda, when he's in car, he looks good. So many people, they look good, but very few. Most of them look like you wouldn't want to be like them because they dress so badly, or they're right off the street, so if you were a gentleman, you wouldn't even want to talk to them. So it's they're not even catching the potencies that are working here. So that's the point. You catch the potencies, you understand what's going on, so then you address appropriately. So this philosophy is very, very practical. Very practical. Yes?
So you're speaking about that the dress should be practical. So while traveling like in an airplane for 10, 12 hours, three kacha is not exactly the most...
Depends on your practice. I wouldn't go there, not with me. I have worn a dhoti everywhere, done everything, and I don't really...
A lungi or a dhoti?
A dhoti. I wore a dhoti for quite a long time, and I wore it good. I've never seen any reason
to
not.
Maybe courses on how to travel with...
That's the whole... No, you need courses on how to wear them and different ways to wear them and stuff like that. It's a matter you know how to wear it, it works. Most of the stuff that women wear in the West is really unpractical for doing. They're always having to pull it up so the crack in their bum doesn't stick out. Pull it up so the nipples don't come out. And this and that kind of stuff. Very impractical stuff, but they claim it's so practical. No, it is. It's practical means people can see your body, they get maybe attracted, maybe you got a shot at finding somebody to live with for the rest of your life.
Well, you know what I'm saying? So, if you're moving in and out of a seat and it's got these...
Yeah, so therefore it's called a hand. And when you get up, you move your hand like this. When women sit down with skirts, they do it all the time.
Question of practice.
It's a practice, question of practice. Everything's a question of practice.
So
you know, you've got a gun in the holster under your arm. It's a matter of practice to get it through the suit, into there, pull it out in a nanosecond and blow the guy's head off. That's, you know, more practical would be to have it, you know, slung across here with the whole thing like that and all the bullets right there. You like that, but then that's a little obvious. Yeah, so it's not so fashionable these days. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of practice. It means if you value it, you will practice it where it works. You get on a bicycle, the first thing you do is notice every tree there is between you and wherever you're going and bump into them. But with practice, you can do anything. So it's a matter of clothes or practice. Otherwise, Krishna is not so stupid that he'd take a bunch of cows out into a field, you know, with a dhoti on if it wasn't practical. It didn't look good and practical. Like that. So it's just a matter of practice. You just know that the arm is there, the folds in the back get caught in that. So you know how to deal with it. You know? So it's just practice.
Did he also wear pants sometimes? I mean, sometimes we dress the deity in dhoti, sometimes the deity is dressed in pants.
But those pants, generally, if they're done traditionally, they're generally done out of a dhoti. Like that. But if you're going to wear pants, go ahead, wear those kind of pants, you know. Great. But you also have to wear one of those shirts. Yeah, and the turban, yes. Yeah.
So you're saying about the devotees who just don't look right, no matter whether they're wearing Western dress or they're wearing Indian or Vedic dress or whatever. So it's a question of being respectable, of carrying it with style.
Yeah.
And so that just really boils down to the personality, because the person, taste, you cannot argue about taste, you can also not educate people on taste in the same way of dressing. You can say, okay, this is the what we understand as taste or as sanity, and you should be inside this box somewhere, otherwise you're not fit for public consumption.
Yeah.
But then again, everybody has their own choice on how...
Their choice, but it still is how they wear their choice. Because it's a matter of how it's worn and presented. Because, in other words, it's still the mentality. In other words, you're dealing with higher elements here, higher potencies. The whole idea is that you have your dress, but then there's something behind that. Because the point is if we simply deal with the physical, what is elevating us? So the physical is based on the metaphysical. And that metaphysical is going in the direction of spiritual. So the whole idea is that you become conscious of what you're dressing, how you're, what you're wearing, how you're wearing it, the situations you are in when you're wearing it. Then it starts to make sense. You know what I'm saying? It's like you walk along and there's a puddle, right? You have these nice, you know, pants. It's hard to pull them up. The dhoti, you just just grab it and it's up. You could walk through water, no problem. You know, so I mean, if you could walk on water, that's even better. But then, so the whole idea is that it's creating consciousness. That's what you're trying to create. Because if you can become conscious of what you're wearing and how you're wearing it, you could become conscious that those principles of what you're wearing and how you're wearing is Krishna. That's the next step. But unless you're conscious of what you're wearing, other than your own personal identity, then how are you going to see Krishna in it? You know? That's what you're trying to get at. That's why any aspect can be used. Even if they're wearing some, you know, fashionable things that are, you know, maybe very strange, but still they have to wear it properly according to the fashion to get that aesthetic potency to flow through it. Then it becomes useful. Otherwise it didn't. You know what I'm saying? So that's the that's the point, is that you're trying to invoke consciousness wherever is your attachments, because that's what this section is about. This section is about who's behind passionate attraction. So the thing is why we're attracted to wear that kind of pants or that shoe or that shirt or have this kind of couch or that picture on the wall or this kind of treating of our floor or curtains or our bed covers or our pillows. You know, like that is because of Krishna's potency of attraction here. It's actually Krishna, but we don't realize. So if it's Krishna, then it's either I'm keeping all these 20 pillows on my bed nicely because I like the look of these pillows, or I just like pillows, or something. But the point is what is it we're dealing with? If Krishna is those pillows, then it's not I like them looking like this, therefore I keep them nice. The Krishna's come in the form of these pillows. And with the potency of Lakshmi is that, that attractiveness or whatever it is, and also that form. Therefore, I need to keep these pillows nicely and looking nice because it's service to Krishna. So, therefore, all your 20 little fancy throw pillows have become connected to Krishna. Otherwise, they're just being practical and just keeping a nice house like anybody else does. And it has, therefore, no Krishna conscious content. It's only, but the other one is there. And after a while, if it's Krishna, then it's like, why do I need 20 of them? Right? If it's my nature, I got to have 20, then I have 20. But if it's not, I simply picked it up because I saw someone else with 20 of them, then actually it looks nice with only 5. So I start reducing my attachments because I'm increasing the quality of how I'm dealing. Does that make sense? So you can start with anything. You know, you're going up the stair, and you know, on that little landing, there's a little triangle temple table in the corner, and on it's a little, you know, dinky little vase thing, and inside is a few little dried flowers. But those flowers should be looking proper. It should be in the vase. The vase should be properly on the table. The table's not sticking out from the corner. It's sitting there properly. Why? Because it's Krishna's potencies. It's there because you wanted it. So it's starting from yourself, but since it's there, work with it properly. It's Krishna. Yes.
But to get it there in that shape and style took a lot of effort, a lot of trouble, and a lot of disturbance. So the so-called harmony and peace, which is now present, which you say one can appreciate as Krishna, has cost a lot of effort and headache. So the question is always, what is greater? Like in association.
Yeah, yeah.
The pain or the pleasure which is perceived from it.
Yeah. So then that will put it'll start to make you conscious. So you'll start to think about that. And then, you know, you'll start to, be more wary about going into boutiques that are in buildings that are leaning more than Pisa, you know, to buy stuff because it might fall over at any time, right? And so then like you're saying, the trouble it takes, is it really worth it? Because if you're looking at Krishna as aesthetics, do I actually need Krishna in that form of that aesthetic? So then I might not need it, so therefore I don't have to, you know, get the car, go to Calcutta, run around, and do all the different things and all that kind of thing. And then to do that, you have to have the money, to have to do that, you have to, you know, all these different things. So it may be seen as that I can appreciate Krishna aesthetics in much less, or more simple, or more refined, or something. And then slowly, slowly it reduces the need, because you're connecting it.
But the reductionist might also tend to some tinge of Mayavad, if you're taking out the elaborateness and just making
it... No, because the thing is fineness is not a matter of clear cut, is meaning that it's a matter of, because it's Krishna, therefore it's refined. Because it's like you see in what do you call it? This is, you know, really stretching. You understand how where this is going? We're still dealing with this same point, but we're trying to bring it into your house. You know what I'm saying? Because we'll say, okay, great philosophy, and I talk about the pillar, but I don't got a pillar in my house. You know, so it doesn't work. The whole thing is there, is that it's going in, is that you take Versailles. No one will say it's stark. Or Mayavad. But it's like got one room, and inside is one pillar, and on is one clock. But it perfectly matches. You know what I'm saying? So you look in architectural magazine, you know, Better Home and Gardens. You generally have two kinds of houses. Very clean, very few things that are there nicely, but well balanced. Or you name it, it's there. You know? Millions of things, but they're all nicely placed. In either case, it's one aspect of Krishna. Simplicity is a form of beauty. You know? At the same time, the very things that are very complex. You know what I'm saying? You take the cauliflower, you steam it, you put some butter and salt and pepper on it, it tastes nice. It's very simple, but it's balanced. You take that same cauliflower, cook it with 20 different spices and a nice gravy, and it tastes nice, because it's balanced. But the main point is according to your conditioned nature, however complex or simple is required, that's what you use. But the point is it's Krishna. It's not something else. The reason you like it is because it's Krishna. So therefore, senses Krishna, start to deal with it properly. You can't not deal with it. You can't just throw the pillow in the corner. As if that's Krishna or Lakshmi, you don't do that. You have to respect that pillow and put it properly. So that means everything in your house, you have to actually deal with it, respect it. Not, it's mine, I deal with it however I like. No, it's Krishna, therefore you have to deal with it according to how he likes. Like that. Is that okay? Okay, should end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.